lavalier microphone to her blouse. "No need to touch anything," she said. "It'll be activated once you go out on stage." It was happening very quickly, but May felt this was best. If she had more time, she would only get more nervous. So she listened to Jules and Teresa, and in minutes she was in the wings of the stage, listening to 1,000 circlers enter the auditorium, talking and laughing and dropping themselves into their seats with happy thumps. She wondered, briefly, if Calden was anywhere out there. "May?" She turned to find Eamon Bailey behind her, wearing a sky blue shirt, smiling warmly at her. "Are you ready?"
"I think so."
"You'll be great," he said. "Don't worry, just be natural. We're just recreating the conversation we had last week, okay?"
"Okay."
And then he was on stage, waving to the crowd, everyone clapping with abandon. There were 2 burgundy-colored chairs on the stage, facing each other, and Bailey sat down in one and spoke into the darkness.
"Hello, circlers," he said.
"Hello, Eamon,"
they roared back.
"Thank you for being here today on the very special Dream Friday. I thought we'd change it up a bit today and have not a speech, but an interview. As some of you know, we do these from time to time to shed light on members of the circle and their thoughts, their hopes, and in this case, their evolutions."
He sat in one of the chairs and smiled into the wings.
"I had a conversation with a young circler the other day that I wanted to share with you. So I've asked May Holland, who some of you might know as one of our newbies in customer experience, to join me today."
"May?" May stepped into the light. The feeling was of instant weightlessness, of floating in black space with 2 distant but bright suns blinding her. She couldn't see anyone in the audience and could barely orient herself to the stage, but she managed to direct her body, her legs made of straw, her feet leaden, toward Bailey. She found her chair and, with 2 hands, feeling numb and blind, lowered herself into it.
"Hello, May. How are you?"
"Terrified?"
The audience laughed.
"Don't be nervous," Bailey said, smiling to the audience and giving her the slightest look of concern.
"Easy for you to say," she said,
and there was laughter throughout the room. This laughter felt good and calmed her. She breathed in and looked in the front row, finding 5 or 6 shadowy faces, all smiling. She was, she realized, and now felt in her bones, among friends. She was safe. She took a sip of water, felt it cool everything inside her, and put her hands in her lap. She felt ready.
"May, in one word, how would you describe the awakening you had this past week?"
This part they had rehearsed. She knew Bailey wanted to start with this idea of an awakening.
"It was just that, Eamon." She'd been instructed to call him Eamon. "It was an awakening."
"Oops, I guess I just stole your thunder," he said.
The audience laughed. "I should have said, what did you have this week, but tell us, why that word?"
"Well, awakening seems right to me," May said, and then added, "now."
The word "now" appeared a split second later than it should have, and Bailey's eye twitched.
"Let's talk about this awakening," he said. "It started on Sunday night. Many of the people in the room already know the broad outlines of the events, with sea change and all, but give us a summary."
May looked at her hands in what she realized was a theatrical gesture. She had never before looked at her hands to indicate some level of shame.
"I committed a crime, basically," she said. "I borrowed a kayak without the knowledge of the owner, and I paddled to an island in the middle of the bay."
"That was Blue Island, I understand."
"It was."
"And did you tell anyone you were doing this?"
"No, I didn't."
"Now, May, did you have the intention of telling anyone about this trip afterward?"
"No."
"And did you document it at all? Pictures? Video?"
"No, nothing."
There were some murmurs from the audience. May and Eamon had expected a reaction to this revelation, and they both paused to allow the crowd to assimilate this information.
"Did you know you were doing something wrong in borrowing this kayak without the owner's knowledge?"
"I did."
"But you did it anyway. Why?"
"Because I thought no one would know,"
Another low murmur from the audience. So this is an interesting point. The very fact that you thought this action would remain secret enabled you to commit this crime, correct?
Correct.
Would you have done it had you known people were watching?
Definitely not.
So, in a way, doing all this in darkness, unobserved and unaccountable, it facilitated impulses that you regret.
Absolutely. The fact that I thought I was alone, unwatched, enabled me to commit a crime, and I risked my life. I wasn't wearing a life preserver.
Again, a loud murmur rippled through the audience. So, you not only committed a crime against the owner of this property, but you risked your own life, all because you were being enabled by some, what, some cloak of invisibility? The audience rumbled with laughter. Bailey's eyes stayed on May, telling her, things are going well.
Right, she said.
I have a question, May. Do you behave better or worse when you're being watched?
Better, without a doubt.
When you're alone, unwatched, unaccountable, what happens?
Well, for one thing, I steal kayaks.
The audience laughed in a sudden bright burst.
Seriously, I do things I don't want to do. I lie.
The other day, when we spoke, you had a way of putting it that I thought was very interesting and succinct. Can you tell us all what you said?
I said that secrets are lies.
Secrets are lies. It's very memorable. Can you walk us through your logic with that phrase, May?
Well, when there's something kept secret, two things happen. One is that it makes crimes possible. We behave worse when we're not accountable. That goes without saying. And second, secrets inspire speculation. When we don't know what's being hidden, we guess. We make up answers.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Bailey turned to the audience. When we can't reach a loved one, we speculate. We panic. We make up stories about where they are or what's happened to them. And if we're feeling ungenerous or jealous, we make up lies. Sometimes some very damaging lies. We assume they're doing something nefarious, all because we don't know something.
It's like when we see two people whispering, May said. We worry, we feel insecure, we make up terrible things they might be saying. We assume it's about us and that it's catastrophic.
When they're probably asking where the bathroom is. Bailey got a big laugh and enjoyed it.
Right, May said.
She knew she was approaching a few phrases she needed to get right. She'd said them in Bailey's library, and she just needed to say them again the way she'd first said them.
For example, if there's a locked door, I start to make up all kinds of stories about what might be behind it. I feel like it's some kind of secret, and it leads me to making up lies. But if all the doors are open, physically and metaphorically, there's only the one truth.
Bailey smiled. She'd nailed it. I like that, May. When the doors are open, there's only one truth. So let's recap that first statement of May's. Can we get that on the screen?
The words, secrets are lies, appeared on the screen behind May.
Seeing the words 4 feet tall gave her a complicated feeling, something between thrill and dread. Bailey was all smiles, shaking his head, admiring the words. Okay, we've resolved that had you known that you'd be held accountable for your actions, you wouldn't have committed this crime. Your access to the shadows, in this case illusory shadows, facilitates bad behavior. And when you know you're being watched, you are your better self. Correct?
Correct.
Now, let's talk about the second revelation you made after this episode. You mentioned that you didn't document this trip to Blue Island in any way. Why not?
Well, first of all, I knew I was doing something illegal.
Sure, but you said that you often kayak in the bay, and you'd never documented these trips. You hadn't joined any circle clubs devoted to kayaking, and you hadn't posted accounts, photos, video, or comments. Have you been doing these kayak trips under the auspices of the CIA?
May and the audience laughed.
No. Then why these secret trips? You haven't told anyone about them before or after. You haven't mentioned them anywhere. No accounts exist of any of these excursions. Am I right?
You are right.
May heard loud clucks spread through the auditorium. What did you see on this last trip, May? I understand it was quite beautiful.
It was, Eamon. There was an almost full moon, and the water was very calm, and I felt like I was paddling through liquid silver.
Sounds incredible.
It was. Animals? Wildlife? I was followed for a while by a Seoul harbor seal, and he dipped above and below the surface as if he was curious and also urging me on. I'd never been to this island. Very few people have. And once I got to the island, I climbed to the top, and the view from the peak was incredible. I saw the golden lights of the city and the black foothills toward the Pacific, and even saw a shooting star.
A shooting star? Lucky you.
I was very lucky.
But you didn't take a picture?
No.
Not any video?
No.
So there's no record of any of this?
No, not outside my own memory.
There were audible groans from the audience. Bailey turned to the audience, shaking his head, indulging them.
Okay, he said, sounding as if he were bracing himself. Now this is where we get into something personal. As you all know, I have a son, Gunner, who was born with CP, cerebral palsy. Though he's living a very full life, and we're trying, always, to improve his opportunities, he is confined to a wheelchair. He can't walk, he can't run, he can't go kayaking.
So what does he do if he wants to experience something like this?
Well, he watches video. He looks at pictures. Much of his experiences of the world come through the experiences of others. And of course, so many of you circlers have been so generous, providing him with video and photos of your own travels. When he experiences the sea change view of a circler climbing Mount Kenya, he feels like he's climbed Mount Kenya. When he sees firsthand video from an America's Cup crew member, Gunner feels in some way that he's sailed in the America's Cup too. These experiences were facilitated by generous humans who have shared what they saw with the world, my son included. And we can only extrapolate how many others there are out there like Gunner. Maybe they're disabled, maybe they're elderly, homebound, maybe 1,000 things. But the point is that there are millions of people who can't see what you saw, May. Does it feel right to have deprived them of seeing what you saw?
May's throat was dry, and she tried not to show her emotion. It doesn't. It feels very wrong.
May thought of Bailey's son, Gunner, and thought of her own father.
Do you think they have a right to see things like you saw?
I do.
In this short life, Bailey said, why shouldn't everyone see whatever it is they want to see? Why shouldn't everyone have equal access to the sights of the world, the knowledge of the world, all the experiences available in this world?
May's voice was just above a whisper.
Everyone should. But this experience you had, you kept it to yourself, which is curious because you do share online. You work at the Circle. Your party rank is in the T2K. So why do you think this particular hobby of yours, these extraordinary explorations, why hide these from the world?
I can't quite figure out what I was thinking, to be honest, May said.
The crowd murmured. Bailey nodded.
Okay. We just talked about how we, as humans, hide what we're ashamed of. We do something illegal or unethical, and we hide it from the world because we know it's wrong. But hiding something glorious, a wonderful trip on the water, the moonlight coming down, a shooting star?
It was just selfish, Eamon. It was selfish and nothing more. The same way a child doesn't want to share her favorite toy. I understand that secrecy is part of, well, an aberrant behavior system. It comes from a bad place, not a place of light and generosity. And when you deprive your friends or someone like your son, Gunner, of experiences like I had, you're basically stealing from them. You're depriving them of something they have a right to. Knowledge is a basic human right. Equal access to all possible human experiences is a basic human right.
May surprised herself with her eloquence, and the audience answered with thunderous applause. Bailey was looking at her like a proud father. When the applause subsided, Bailey spoke softly, as if reluctant to get in her way.
You had a way of putting it that I'd like you to repeat. Well, it's embarrassing, but I said that sharing is caring.
The audience laughed. Bailey smiled warmly.
I don't think it's embarrassing. This expression has been around for a while, but it applies here, doesn't it, May?
maybe uniquely apropos. I think it's simple. If you care about your fellow human beings, you share what you know with them. You share what you see. You give them anything you can. If you care about their plight, their suffering, their curiosity, their right to learn and know anything the world contains, you share with them. You share what you have and what you see and what you know. To me, the logic there is undeniable. The audience cheered, and while they did so, three new words, sharing is caring, appeared on the screen, below the previous three. Bailey was shaking his head, amazed.
I love that. May, you have a way with words. And there's one more statement you made that I think should cap off what I think everyone here would agree has been a wonderfully enlightening and inspiring talk.
The audience clapped warmly.
We were talking about what you saw as the impulse to keep things to yourself.
Well, it's not something I'm proud of, and I don't think it rises above the level of simple selfishness.
Now, I really understand that. I understand that we're obligated as humans to share what we see and know, and that all knowledge must be democratically accessible.
It's a natural state of information to be free.
Right.
We all have a right to know everything we can. We all collectively own the accumulated knowledge of the world.
Right, May said.
So what happens if I deprive anyone or everyone of something I know? Aren't I stealing from my fellow humans?
Indeed, Bailey said, nodding earnestly.
May looked to the audience and saw the entire first row, the only faces visible, nodding too.
And given your way with words, May, I wonder if you can tell us this third and last revelation you made. What did you say?
Well, I said privacy is theft.
Bailey turned to the audience.
Isn't that an interesting way of putting it, guys? Privacy is theft.
The words now appeared on the screen behind him in great white letters. Privacy is theft.
May turned to look at the three lines together. She blinked back tears, seeing it all there. Had she really thought of all that herself?
Secrets are lies. Sharing is caring. Privacy is theft.
May's throat was tight, dry. She knew she couldn't speak, so she hoped Bailey wouldn't ask her to. As if sensing how she felt, that she was overcome, he winked at her and turned to the audience.
Let's thank May for her candor, her brilliance, and her consummate humanity. Can we please?
The audience was on its feet. May's face was on fire. She didn't know if she should sit or stand. She stood briefly, then felt silly, so sat down again and waved from her lap.
Somewhere, in the stampeding applause, Bailey managed to announce the capper to it all, that May, in the interest of sharing all she saw and could offer the world, would be going transparent immediately. Book 2. It was a bizarre creature, ghost-like, vaguely menacing, and never still. But no one who stood before it could look away. May was hypnotized by it. Its slashing form, its fins like blades, its milky skin and wool-gray eyes. It was certainly a shark. It had its distinctive shape, its malevolent stare, but this was a new species, omnivorous and blind. Stenton had brought it back from his trip to the Marianas Trench in the Circle submersible. The shark was not the only discovery. Stenton had retrieved heretofore unknown jellyfishes, seahorses, manta rays, all of them near translucent, ethereal in their movements, all on display in a series of enormous aquariums he'd had constructed nearly overnight to house them. May's tasks were to show her watchers the beasts, to explain when necessary, and to be, through the lens worn around her neck, a window into this new world, and the world, generally, of the circle. Every morning, May put on a necklace, much like Stuart's, but lighter, smaller, and with the lens worn over her heart. There, it presented the steadiest view and the widest. It saw everything that May saw, and often more. The quality of the raw video was such that viewers could zoom, pan, freeze, and enhance. The audio was carefully engineered to focus on her immediate conversations, to record but make secondary any ambient sound or background voice.